The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
As minds are focused on the war in the Middle East, battles are still continuing on the front line in Ukraine's war with Russia. But as this war effort drags on, Russia is solidifying its presence in eastern and southern Ukraine by pouring millions of dollars into a build-out of transport and trade infrastructure in a region that is now called New Russia by the Russians. Carolina Hurd is a National Security Fellow at the Institute for the Study of War and is on the line with us now on all of this. Good evening to you, Carolina. I was reading with great interest what the Russians are doing. Superhighways, railway infrastructure. This is classic colonialism, isn't it?
Absolutely. The point is very much to cement Russia's presence in this area and also make it really difficult down the road for these territories to reintegrate with Ukraine. And it's also, of course, facilitating the relocation of Russians to these occupied areas of Ukraine, all of which is very much against international law and resembles the sort of classic settler colonialism that Russia has done in its previous occupations in the past.
Yeah, we would be familiar with it here. It was very much what the British did in Ireland. They built things. They built quite useful things at times. But in doing so, they, I suppose, wove the fabric of Ireland and England closer together. And this would be very similar. It isn't just the building. And they have built, as I say, this highway that circles the... Is it the Sea of Araz? They have connected Crimea more effectively, all of that. They're also selling Ukrainian assets, things like mines, to Russian investors.
Exactly, yes. So one of the really big developments that I've been observing over the last few months is that Russia is really trying to make Ukraine this attractive investment opportunity for Russians and also for international investors. There's actually been a really big uptick in Chinese investment in occupied Ukraine. But this idea that the assets, whether they be natural resources or grain or residential infrastructure, are for sale, and it's something that Russia can basically reap a profit off of. And that's been a really concerning development in the overall effort to really integrate these territories into the Russian financial system and support Russian efforts to bring more Russians or foreigners to actually populate these lands as well.
Carolina, one of the things, I suppose, against repopulation of these lands or against external investment is Ukrainian military action. But Ukraine is struggling to contain the level of development, aren't they, in these new Russian-held regions of Ukraine?
There's really not that much that they can do because the Russians are counteracting whatever military risks there are in investing in these territories by providing really high investment incentives for people to basically come and buy up land or infrastructure assets in occupied Ukraine. And that sort of incentive, financial incentive, seems to be outweighing any sort of fear of repopulating this land or also buying up assets or real estate and that sort of thing. So the Russians are really aware of this risk, but they're trying to counteract it. And they also have the over 10 years of experience with Crimea and Donbass. When they occupied these areas in 2014, there was military action going on there, but they were able to stimulate investment and interest in these areas to really build them up and build them into Russia in a way that is now being applied to the rest of occupied Ukraine.
Yeah, I was looking at one of the biggest sales that have taken place. A gold mine in Luhansk was bought for just under $10 million. That doesn't seem, I mean, it's a huge amount of money, but it doesn't seem like a lot if potentially you now own a mine that could produce hundreds of millions of dollars worth of gold. These financial incentives are real. And what, I suppose, strategically, if anything, can Ukraine do about this? I mean, this speaks of a very, very long-term plan for these occupied areas by the Russians, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. In terms of the longevity of these plans, the Russians released plans a few days ago to build a road network connecting all four occupied oblasts that includes areas of Ukraine that Russia doesn't currently occupy, which very much signals their intent for the future. But in terms of what Ukraine can do, they're in a really difficult situation. And I think one thing that I'm very interested in is Ukrainian military intelligence being able to coordinate with Ukrainian partisan movements living in occupied Ukraine to really start targeting this sort of buildup of infrastructure. It is happening, but on a very small scale because of the level of oppression that is currently active in these occupied areas. So I think that one way that Ukraine can really challenge this is by investing in scaling up the partisan movement to really try to challenge and put friction on these development projects as they're popping up. But that being said, it's very much an uphill battle for Ukraine. They're in a very tough spot, and that is the exact point of everything that Russia's doing.
This level of Russian imperialism, this must further, I suppose, worry all of those other countries that border with Russia, or all of those former Soviet countries now in Eastern Europe. This is sort of very revealing in terms of Putin's mindset, isn't it? In terms of, you know, the glorious USSR being a kind of a reimagined long-term project for him.
Oh, absolutely. There's a playbook. There's a playbook that Russia has enacted in its occupation of sovereign territories, whether that be the Chechen civil wars, or then the invasion of Georgia in 2008, the invasion of Crimea and Donbass in 2014, and of course the full-scale invasion in 2022. That's the blueprint for what Putin wants with the rest of the former Soviet Union. I would anticipate that if Russia was able to, in the future, invade any parts of the Baltics, for example, they would apply a very similar occupation playbook to whatever lands and people they do occupy.
And as someone who studies this as closely as you do, do you think that would be his next move? Because it's funny, when you laid it out like that, we often think of, oh, the Russian move into Ukraine, but we forget what they did already in Chechnya. We forget what they did already in Georgia, that Ukraine wasn't their first move in this direction. Would you see the Baltics as next in his sights if he was to move beyond Ukraine to elsewhere? I was in Lithuania a few years ago, and they still talk with huge bitterness about the Soviet years there. They still talk about the Soviets on their streets, and there is huge anger, I think, latent there still among the Balkan states.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think there's what the Russian military is doing right now versus what they'd be capable of doing. In terms of what they're physically doing, they're preparing for a long conflict beyond Ukraine. They're restructuring their armed forces with a long-term conventional war in mind. And it's our assessment that that would extend beyond Ukraine. Where exactly they'll go is, of course, a very interesting question. They've been doing the sort of informational condition setting in the Baltics that they did in Ukraine prior to the first invasion in 2014. So in terms of a long game, that could be one of the axes of occupation. But of course, it is hard to tell, and it is all very contingent on how the war in Ukraine ends. Because if Russia gets what it wants in Ukraine, that will be fuel for whatever future invasions it decides to launch. But if Ukraine and its partners are able to impose a strategic defeat on Russia and Ukraine, that will very much complicate that calculus moving forward.
Okay, so Ukraine could embolden Russia, obviously. Could it also enrich Russia? I mean, Ukraine has significant natural resources.
That is very much the concern with watching what has happened over the last few years. It's, you know, these mines, the grain, the amount that the millions of tons of grain that Russia has stolen from occupied Ukraine and exported to international markets. Occupation is a lucrative business, and it is becoming a lucrative business for the Russians. And the longer they can occupy these territories and the more money they can make, that goes directly into the Russian federal budget and supports its efforts to actually continue fighting its war in Ukraine on one hand, and then building out its armed forces for the future on the other hand.
And maybe lastly, Carolina, you mentioned Chinese investment into these Ukrainian assets. There's a lot of talk that China and Russia are also in an alliance, a fairly low-key alliance, but an alliance nonetheless with Iran, that is Chinese ships are getting through the Strait of Hormuz, all of those things. Is that part of this, I suppose, future chessboard that we're looking at, that Russia is not necessarily going to be operating in isolation?
Yes, that's very, very true. And Russia hasn't really been operating in isolation since 2022. It's received drone support from the Iranians. It's received troops and artillery from the North Koreans. And its entire defense industrial base and defense production at this point is basically being propped up by China. So this is not a war between two countries. This is a much wider war because of the support that Russia has been receiving from Iran, China, and North Korea. And there's evidence that these countries will then in turn benefit off of the occupation of Ukraine. China is, of course, the clearest example with all of the investment that it's doing in gold mines, in water infrastructure, energy infrastructure, et cetera, in occupied Ukraine. But it's all very much part of this sort of wider puzzle. And an emboldened Russia very much means an emboldened China, North Korea, and Iran down the road.
Thank you very much for joining us. Absolutely fascinating. That is Carolina Hurd, National Security Fellow with the Institute for the Study of War.
Thank you so much.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric Range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.